This is the EWN Radio Network.
I think affiliative humor is very healthy for people who are going through some difficult health condition.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my pleasure to be with you here again on another Friday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Oh my goodness, I can't believe another week has gone by. Can you? It just sometimes seems to go faster and faster the older I get. Crazy, isn't it? Well, I'm absolutely enjoying my time. I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest right now enjoying it, though I have to admit I do miss some warmer weather. It's a little cold and rainy today, but that's okay. It's, you know, I know that in the summer all this rain will make beautiful green gardens and then my flowers bloom, so that's all good. I've got some fun things planned for the weekend. Last time I talked to you, I was going to a farmer's market and I found some amazing things, although it's still early in the year, so a lot of it was still the root vegetables and the squashes and things, but I'm looking forward to finding more delicious things at a farmer's market tomorrow. I hope you have something fun planned. And tonight, I really do have something unique and fun planned. We haven't offered this topic before, but when I met our guest, it was such an intriguing topic. I said, you have to be on the Autoimmune Hour because he, let me give you his bio here, at least a little snippet of it. It's an amazing bio or resume, and I'll put that up on the web so you can see the whole thing. But his name is Dr. Isaac Prieltinsky, and he was born in Argentina and has lived and worked in Israel, Canada, Australia, and the United States. He is currently the Dean of Education and Human Development at the University of Miami, the inaugural Erwin and Barbara Mottner Chair of Community Well-Being, and the Vice Provost of Institutional Culture. He's published 8 books and over 120 articles and chapters, and his interests are the promotion of well-being in individuals, organizations, and communities, and the integration of wellness and fairness. Now, we're going to talk about his latest book, which is The Laughing Guide to Well-Being, Using Humor and Science to Become Happier and Healthier. Now, isn't that just a great title? I just love that title because he is an expert and he even writes humor columns that are now published in the Miami Herald and Miami Today. And so we're going to talk to him about laughter and humor and how it affects well-being and things that we can integrate into our life to have more well-being. Because as we know, stress and other things like that can make autoimmune flare up and things like that. So how can we integrate humor and wellness into our lives? And so thank you, Dr. Isaac. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
The pleasure is mine.
So tell us a little bit, first off, what brought you to this place to become an expert in the Laughing Guide to Well-Being? When we were talking about this when we first met, I was so intrigued, like, wow, what a fascinating area of study.
Well, I was always interested as an academic in the topic of well-being. I am a psychologist, so I started becoming interested in psychological well-being, emotional wellness, mental health. Over the years, I became more and more interested in how psychological well-being is related to physical well-being, interpersonal well-being, occupational well-being. So this is one track, the academic scholarly track of well-being. And then a few years ago, I had an idea to write a book on well-being that would combine humor, because humor is a way to engage people in a different way with a difficult topic. So usually when you read a lot of health books or self-help, they are about rather complicated situations. So I thought, well, perhaps we can tackle difficult things through humor. And over the years, I've written small humor pieces for my son's bar mitzvah, for a friend's wedding, for my professor's retirement party. So one day I thought, well, perhaps I could do more of it because I really enjoy it. So I started writing introductory humor pieces to my book. And then I said, I'm going to try sending them to the paper. And people really, really liked my humorous take on well-being. And that was a very good combination that gave rise to the current book, The Laughing Guide to Well-Being.
Oh, that's great. Now, one thing I've noticed when I'm listening to humor or humorists or reading even, is one thing I tend to be more receptive, and I'll say almost let my guard down in a way. And so many things that could be maybe not talked about in, I'll say, the world without humor, but somehow when it's wrapped in humor, I find I'm more receptive. Is that how it works, or am I unique?
Yes. No, I think, Sharon, that your intuition is absolutely correct. So the research shows that humor is helping us to learn better. I call this approach smarter through laughter.
Smart. I love that. I need that as a bumper sticker, smarter through laughter. I love that.
Really, because the research shows that when we are experiencing positive emotions, which are engendered by laughter, when we're having a good time, we lower our defenses, we become more creative, and overall, we are able to be more creative and ingenious about problem solving. So the research shows that humor puts you in a frame of mind that facilitates more brainstorming. You can generate more solutions, more options, more possibilities to tackle a problem. And this is the beauty in laughter. So that's how it works. Laughter engenders positive emotions, and positive emotions are engines of creativity and change.
Oh, I love that. Now, a question about laughter, though. I know people laugh at different things, and are using our own laughter, our sort of own internal jokes, or does the same thing happen when we're maybe listening to a humorist or we're listening to someone? Do we get the same effect just by laughing, regardless if it's internal, kind of our own internal laughter jokes, or if it's external?
That's an interesting question. Some people laugh more in social situations, whereas other people laugh when they are by themselves.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I find right. myself an endless source of crazy entertainment.
Right, and me too. So I really enjoy writing my humor columns, first of all, because I get to laugh at my own jokes. And then when you get feedback from other people that, yes, when you tell a story, you make a joke, you show a funny image, and people laugh, it's very reinforcing. So I think that some people tend to derive more laughter in social situations. Some people can just laugh by themselves. And this is one of the beautiful things about humor, that humor is very diverse. And there are different types of humor. For example, there is what's called self-affirmation humor. There is self-deprecation humor. The research shows that people benefit more from self-affirmation humor. For example, when you are, I guess, aggrandizing yourself. I actually happen to like more self-deprecation humor.
For me, I find that easier because I tend to, I'm somewhat of a klutz, and I find that comes more natural to me. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, so I think we have to respect and promote diverse ways to laugh and engage with humor. I will take it in whichever form, wherever it comes from.
Now, what if someone says, oh, well, you're funny, Dr. Isaac, and so, they list off some other people they think are funny, but they say, I'm not funny, or I don't see humor. I can appreciate it, but I don't see it. Can you learn to be humorous?
Well, I think that people range in their capacity to laugh. So not too long ago, a few months ago, I gave a talk. It was an entrepreneurial meeting. Entrepreneurs in Miami got together to talk about their successes and their failures. So I was the humor speaker for the failure section. People come and pour their heart and they say, this is everything that's gone wrong with my project. So the audience consisted of perhaps 50 people. And there were two people in the front row that didn't matter what I said, everybody, 48 people were laughing. And these two people were just they were dead serious, So I thought, could you at least have sat at the back, do you have to stare at me, with this deadly look? So I believe that some people may really be incurable, and that's too bad. But I think most people really can nurture a sense of humor. There are different ways to nurture a sense of humor. There are a few writers that really do it for me. I like David Sedaris, Dave Barry, Andy Borowitz, Joel Stein, Sam Levinson. I really found a series of writers who really make me laugh, and I really enjoy that. And there are some comedy shows that I really like. So my advice is try a few things. Watch The Big Bang Theory. Pick up some really funny authors like the one I mentioned. And then eventually, I believe everyone will find a few sources of laughter that really make them laugh. Even if they don't have to be funny in group situations. You may not be funny. You perhaps can't tell a good story or a joke. But that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy laughter in other ways.
Oh, I'm glad you bring that up. And I want to separate the idea of story and joke for our audience, because I can't tell a good joke because for some reason I always mess up the punchline.
Yes.
But I'm fairly decent at telling some good humorous stories, usually of the self-deprecating kind, but I'm pretty good at telling a few good funny stories. And so that, for me, was something that I worked on. And it was something I wanted to do, and I continued to test it, usually with close family and friends until you are ready to take it out to a larger social circle. I'm glad you brought up the differences, because I really do think that both, either or and both can be cultivated if you want to spend the time learning about it. And one of my favorite humors, I was nodding as you were listing those all over, but she's no longer with us, but Irma Bombeck still makes me laugh.
And yes.
Maybe because I can relate to raising family and all of that. But
absolutely. And another fabulous author was Nora Ephron.
Oh, yes.
And Nora had a similar type of humor, self-deprecation, very domestic humor, extremely funny woman. And when I started writing for the Miami Herald, I had a meeting with the editor, and I sent her a bunch of columns before we met, and she said, you are the male Irma Bombeck. And I felt, oh boy, my goodness, this is such a compliment. I'm so happy now.
That is a wonderful compliment in my book, I'll tell you, because I just find, if I'm feeling low, I just find picking up one of her books and just starting anywhere in it. It doesn't have to be at the beginning. I'll find myself laughing. I'm curious, though, about laughing. One thing that I noticed is I breathe better after laughing. It's almost like forced breathing, yes, or something. I got more oxygen to my brain somehow when after laughing. Mm-hmm. Is that part of what mm-hmm. kind of helps you think better, is because the forcing oxygen to your brain?
That would be one reason. Although I'm not an expert in the physiology of laughter, there are a lot of studies that show that laughter can be a good exercise. There are really so many stories. There is research out there with samples of people who use laughter to improve their emotional well-being. But there are also case studies, as well as some controlled studies, that show that laughter can improve a variety of physiological systems. So the answer is yes. And there is a growing industry in the laughing therapy movement. There are people who work with senior citizens, and they would go to a senior citizen's home and organize laughter sessions. This is very common in India, by the way, laughing groups. So there is a growing industry because people realize this is really good. It makes me feel good, and it does some good for my body as well.
Oh, I'm thinking that because just laughing at a couple of things that in this conversation, and thinking when you were listing off those authors, I started to, I'll say, laugh quietly or laugh internally. All of a yes. sudden, I could feel an immediate shift in how I'm feeling. So this is wonderful, because I'd never really thought about laughing or humor in this way. What are some right. things, as we're thinking about our well-being, I'm thinking, can we force ourselves to laugh even if we don't have a funny story?
Well, I think that this is something that can be nurtured. So, for example, if you have a relationship with your spouse or your children where you feel really safe, that you can be silly and you can perform in front of a family audience of one, two, or three people, I think you ought to try it, because you have to start in a safe place. You know, like being a stand-up comedian or just a humor writer, getting up in front of an audience and either reading or telling a story or a joke, it's very threatening and it's extremely anxiety producing. But if you have a partner, a spouse, a child, a friend with whom you can be really silly, you can start experimenting with this. When I get up, some of the first things I do in the morning, I make funny faces to my wife, and I sing in some languages, some of which I actually speak. And, you know, you have to try different ways to make people laugh. And you have to experiment with the silly within yourself. And I highly recommend it.
I like that, the silly within yourself. Because the one thing about humor that I have found is that it places you in a place of what I'll call, when I'm thinking about it, a vulnerability, and having to be very transparent, because usually there's an element of truth in humor that we all can tend to relate to. It, regardless of our upbringing and our background, a lot of us can go, oh, I've been there, or I know someone who's been there, or that has happened, and seeing the funnier side of some really painful things. And that's what I always find fascinating about humor, is that ability to take things that we can't talk about in without humor, that humor allows us to talk about painful things. So I'm glad you bring up this idea of safety, but because to me it does force us to be vulnerable.
Yes. And, you know, I've lived in different countries, different cultures use humor in different ways to deal with difficult things. And I think humor enables you to talk about painful things in ways that are therapeutic. So I think that we need to be less uptight about what kind of things we can talk and what kind of things we cannot talk. Humor can help us, even if it's a dark joke. Sometimes it opens up, it's very cathartic because you can say through humor some things that you cannot say otherwise. So it's a tool in your toolbox. So you can think of making a joke about difficult things, and then you just feel a release. You feel, oh, thank God, there is at least one way in which we can talk about these very difficult things. So, for example, I lived in Israel for many years, and the Holocaust, it's a tragic event of huge proportions in the unconscious of the Jewish people. But for many years, it was just a taboo topic. And in Israel, Israelis have an absolutely outrageous sense of humor, and they will stop at nothing to laugh at things. So I'm not approving of Holocaust jokes, but I'm just giving it as an example that some sacred cows in some cultures have been broken down because people have used humor to talk about very difficult things.
Right. And that, I think that's important to note, because oftentimes, even with our own health and our loss of whatever it is, the loss of ability to walk or some of the things that happen in autoimmune, can also be difficult to talk about. And I agree that oftentimes I've heard humor where I'm like, oh my goodness, what a topic. But there's something that then allows that breaking down of a boundary or a barrier so people can talk about it.
Yes. So, you know, in my family, we have a disability. My wife uses a wheelchair and she has muscular dystrophy. And we have attended conferences with other people who have muscular dystrophy, and some of these people have an extremely good sense of humor, and they're able to talk about the different encounters that they have with people who do not have a disability and how people without disabilities want to make a light conversation of people in a wheelchair, and they often really screw up and they don't know how to talk to people with a disability. So there is really an endless supply of stories. And I'm actually trying to convince my wife to write something funny about all the humorous encounters that she has had with people who don't know just how to react to a person with a disability. And it can be very serious, but it can also be very funny. So my wife and I laugh a lot about our common misfortunes, and it's a very healthy thing.
Right, because I'm thinking about the number of times, even though as my autoimmune started to kick in, I lost my hair was one of the things that was a side effect from some of the medication. And people would not even comment that I had lost my hair. And I thought that quite funny. And I would start to comment on it because I'm sure they were doing it out of trying to be respectful and not wanting to talk about, as you said, a taboo topic. But internally, I'm just like, almost playing a game mentally, like, are you going to mention that I don't have hair?
Right.
Hello, have you not noticed there's something different?
Yes, exactly. It's the elephant in the room, right? Your listeners would have by now picked up on the fact that I speak with a funny accent. You gave it all away because you told them I was born in Argentina and I lived in Israel, Canada, and Australia. But every time I go in front of an audience and I start talking, I can see people's puzzled looks and they think, like, where is he from? Where is his accent from? So I just say, I'm going to show you that I'm a great psychologist and I know what you're thinking. So then I ask, please raise your hand if in the last 3 minutes you thought, where is his accent from? And of course, everybody raises their hand, but nobody would say, Isaac, where is your accent from? So sometimes you just have to make visible the invisible and explicit the implicit. And that can just be very disarming, and it's a bonding type of humor. I said before there is self-affirmation and self-deprecation, two different types of humor. There is also aggressive humor, and there is also affiliative humor. And affiliative humor is when you laugh with other people. Aggressive humor is the type I don't like, which is when you are laughing at somebody and not with somebody, right? So I think affiliative humor is very healthy for people who are going through some difficult health condition. And a friend of ours went through a very serious episode of breast cancer, chemotherapy, and she coped during the ordeal by writing humor and just pointing out the funny things that happened when she went to the hospital. And I admire our friend. She did an amazing job of coping with a very difficult situation through humor and laughter. And she was very funny.
We need to take a quick commercial break, Dr. Isaac, but we'll be back in just a minute because I want to find out more about how we, as we begin to dip our toe into finding humor and how we can get guide to our well-being with it, but how when family members react that you shouldn't be laughing at that, Sharon, because that would happen to me one time. So we'll be back right after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
You know what drives me crazy? When business owners believe that just because they're not on stage speaking, they don't need stage presence. Stages come in all shapes and sizes. You're on the stage when you're in a boardroom, talking to a prospect, or introducing yourself and your company. I invite you to join me on a free educational webinar called How to Triple Your Income Through Speaking. Learn the critical ingredients to make impact and income on any type of stage. Go to speakersuccessformula.com and grab your spot now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're here with Dr. Isaac Prieltinsky, and he is the author of The Laughing Guide to Well-Being, Using Humor and Science to Become Happier and Healthier. And he's been sharing with us all about the science behind humor and why we laugh and how laughing can change us and make us more creative and all sorts of interesting and fascinating people. And one of the things we've been talking about is using our own current condition as, shall we say, interesting ideas, things that happen to us that we might find funny. Or sometimes when they happen to me, it's not funny, but the longer I sit and think about it, it becomes funny.
Uh-huh.
I've had where family members go, Sharon, you shouldn't talk about that. That wasn't funny. But the more you think about it, the more funny it becomes. How do you deal with family members who tell you that's not funny, even though it happened to you?
Yes, this is a very good point, because I think we need to pursue laughter and humor with our closest relatives and friends. And it may be that some of our closest relatives and friends really don't have a sense of humor, and they are never going to laugh or accept the humorous side of your life and your adventures. Then I think you need to find other people with whom you can share laughter and humor. Now, the good thing about having a long-term relationship is that you can cultivate humor and funny activities together. So, for example, my wife and I, we love watching The Big Bang Theory. So we don't watch much TV, but we absolutely adore that program. So I think it's a matter of looking, right? I would never close a door on somebody who doesn't seem to have a sense of humor. I would try to cultivate it. And as I said before, look for different ways. Watch a funny show, read a funny author, watch a funny YouTube. Eventually, you will find something. If you look for it, I'm pretty sure everyone will find something funny that you can share with people you love.
I'm thrilled that you bring up The Big Bang Theory. I remember a special episode where Sheldon was trying to find out how to be humorous, and he was just pelting his poor friends with all these things that he said, but you should find that funny.
Yes.
I remember that.
That's very endearing.
Yeah, I remember the episode, and one of the reasons I'm laughing, because as a body language expert, people, and remember some of the nonverbals that he was trying to get people to laugh at, and I'm just like, so many people in our world find humor in so many ways. This has just been amazing. What else? What other tips can you have for us about cultivating our humor to help us become happier and, oh, I love this part of your title, healthier?
I think that humor is one important mechanism to promote positive emotions, but it is not the only one. Love, gratitude, nature, forgiveness, helping others, learning, curiosity, all of these activities, they increase positive emotions. So it is really important to pay attention not just to coping with negative emotions and paying attention just to what's not going well in our lives, but we also have to pay attention to how we can build a repertoire and a capital, an internal capital of positive emotions. So just like we have bank accounts, we always want them to be in the plus side. We have an internal repository within our consciousness and our bodies and minds of positive and negative emotions. And I believe that people do not find enough ways or time to build positive emotions. Some people do this through laughter. I write humor. I really enjoy that. Other people watch humor. But other people do very different things, like picking up a hobby, dancing, golfing, biking, spending time in nature, intimate moments with your loved ones. So it would really help, I think, all of us if we can identify more opportunities to have positive emotions in different aspects of our lives. Some people get a lot of positive emotions through their hobbies or their work. They enter a state of flow. And flow is a state in which time seems to stop because you're really having a wonderful time. That's one way to build more positive emotions. Writing a thank you letter to a friend or a relative or a former teacher, giving positive regard to people who have helped us, experiencing forgiveness. So these are many different ways to generate positive emotions.
That's wonderful, because I know we your title of your book is The Laughing Guide to Well-Being, but that's wonderful that it's all about cultivating positive emotions. I think laughing to me is probably a pretty quick way to generate positive emotions, but the idea of having this emotional bank account was really a nice metaphor for us to understand. It doesn't have to just be the laughing currency. It can be many, many other ways. Now, I've noticed that when I'm able to generate those positive emotions or think about positive emotions, bring back up times in my life, that it really did help me get through some of the tougher times of the healing cycle. Are there ways that we, as maybe if we're a caregiver, can help people remember those positive times or create positive times for our loved ones, even if they're maybe a little stuck in not wanting to move forward? Can we be helpful without being pushy?
That's a great question. The way you phrase it, the key is be helpful without being pushy. And I think the answer to that is we can always ask, you know, would this be helpful? Would that be helpful? So I think it's a combination of generating our own ways of helping, which can be as simple as cooking for your friend or inviting your friend to go to the movies or going for a walk or just spending time quiet next to your friend. And for me, the key is to, A, generate a list of ideas that you think your loved one, the person you care for, might appreciate. That's the first step. The second step is offering a menu of all those things and then seeing what does the other person want. We, as all of us, are caregivers in some capacity. You know, we care for our children, for our spouses, for our elderly parents, for friends. And I think the best that we can do is to accompany our people in difficult moments without pretending that we have the answers that will help them. Just asking the right questions, also being there quiet for other people is very helpful. Sometimes our loved ones just need a little quiet time with somebody who can hold their hands. And we don't need to fill in the air with chatter or nonsense. So I think we have to express our love in different ways and ask for what is most useful.
Oh, I'm glad you bring that up, is ask for what's most useful. And you had mentioned previously about not forcing the situation. I can think of several times during the early stages that a lot of people, I knew it was coming from their heart and they were wanting to have a quick fix. And they would offer all sorts of things and be very upset if for whatever reason I chose at that particular time not to implement the suggestion. So I'm glad you brought that up, giving it to someone with an open heart and an open mind that this, and letting them make the choice, because oftentimes as people who lovingly care and see someone hurting, it's too easy to just jump in and try and demand a quick fix, because all of a sudden they're not being how you want them to be, which is difficult.
Yes, and the last thing a person who is suffering from some condition or situation needs is to have to worry about how the other person is going to feel. And there are moments in time when we need to concentrate on how we are doing. And we don't need to feel the burden of this, having to feel that I'm offending somebody else because they gave me a stupid suggestion that I don't like. So that is really, people have to pay attention to where is my need to help you coming from? Is it because I authentically want to be with you in a non-judgmental, caring way? Or is it because I, caregiver, can't stand the pain of the uncertainty or not knowing? So this requires a level of self-awareness on the part of the caregiver the caregiver should be having a talk within him or herself that says, I am here to help somebody else right now. I am not here to dump onto this person my own anxieties because I don't know how this will turn out. I hope this is helpful.
Oh, very helpful. Very helpful. Because that, I find from participants that comment on the shows, ask that question a lot about, usually from the receiver, not from the giver. Like, yes. How do I say thank you, but no thanks, and nicely? And I'm glad we brought up the subject of when you are the giver of the advice, knowing the intent of where that's coming from and being very self-aware of why, what is my intention for giving this? And oftentimes demanding a quick fix doesn't work.
Right. And I think as the person receiving the help or the advice or the idea, it's really very helpful to have a diplomatic answer, a respectful answer that says, you know, I'm sure that I feel that you really want to help me, but at this time, this is what would work best for me. So you can say this in a loving and respectful way that is assertive, respectful, appreciative of the other person, but at the same time, you are expressing yourself and saying, this is not what I really need at this moment.
I loved your answer too, because it gave the suggestion of what was needed at that time that you, as the person receiving it, would want. And so I could see how that could alleviate some of the pressure on the other person trying to fix it when they say, I didn't know you wanted that. I can do that. It gives them something, it gives a direction for them to go instead of just feeling like they've been rejected. I love that, how you framed that into ending with a suggestion that would be more helpful. That was wonderful.
Right. And we can say, you know, at this point in time, what would be most helpful to me is X, Y, or Z. And that puts the person in need in control. And I think giving our loved ones an opportunity to experience control over their lives, often in very difficult times, you know, during a health care emergency or illness or the loss of a loved one or loss of employment, whatever that might be, the best gift we can give our loved ones is a sense of control over their lives. So we are there to enable them to experience control over their lives. And at that point in time, we are helpers that want to facilitate self-determination and autonomy. Because often people who go through some illnesses, they go through some procedures, they have very little say in them. You go into a hospital, you experience loss of control of your life because your life has been turned over to physicians and nurses and specialists. So we need to do whatever we can to give our loved ones a heightened sense of control over their lives.
That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. I'm just going, bravo, bravo. Well, we're just about out of time. This has been so fascinating to me about how laughter and humor and actually just understanding positive emotions, how getting back a sense of control in our lives is so important to our happiness and our healing and our continued gaining health again. This is fantastic. Tell us more about how we can find your book and more about your amazing work and understanding what well-being is about.
Well, thank you. People can go to www.thelaughingguide.com. And people can subscribe to my humor blog. I post often humorous blogs about health and well-being. You can also find the link to my book. There is also a link to an online platform. This is an intervention we created with my research team. The website for that is www.funforwellness.com.
Fun, F-U-N, funforwellness.com?
Yes.
That is a great website address.
So Fun for Wellness is an online platform to promote health and well-being, where many of the concepts that we discussed today are expressed through games, case studies, videos, self-reflection exercises. It is a free website. We conducted a couple of studies, and we are now about to publish in two scientific journals the positive results of engaging with this platform. And people can see me also using humor to engender positive emotions. And if people want, have a curiosity to hear me talk more about humor and well-being, they can go to thelaughingguide.com. And there are a few videos there as well of some TED Talks I have given. So these are some resources.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Autoimmune Hour today. This is just a topic we hadn't touched on. And when we met, you know, I said right away, you've got to come on to the show. So thank you so much, Dr. Prelutensky. That's just, it's been fantastic that you're bringing us a whole new way of looking at wellness and getting healthier. And everyone, be sure and check out his websites. And as always, have a great weekend, whatever your adventure. Enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
You know what drives me crazy? When business owners believe that just because they're not on stage speaking, they don't need stage presence. Stages come in all shapes and sizes. You're on the stage when you're in a boardroom, talking to a prospect, or introducing yourself and your company. I invite you to join me on a free educational webinar called How to Triple Your Income Through Speaking. Learn the critical ingredients to make impact and income on any type of stage. Go to speakersuccessformula.com and grab your spot now.
This is the EWN Radio Network.